Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family. But I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about...
Freedom!
Your freedom, no excuses, on the Freedom Report Podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. If today's your first show and you enjoy it, do me a favor. At the end of the show, you can subscribe to me on iTunes. It's called the Freedom Report, which you can search us on iTunes. But if you don't have an Apple device, if you have an Android or something similar, you can also download us on Stitcher. It's the Android app called Stitcher. You can just go to Stitcher.com, search the Freedom Report, subscribe to us. That way you can get our show every time we upload a new episode, which is about two to three times a week. If you really enjoy the show and you want to help us out, don't forget, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That helps us out, goes a really long way to help me spread liberty, which this show was amazingly. This show was number one in news and politics on podbean.com last year. That's our host. And I think that was amongst like something like 700,000 other podcasters. So amazing. The message of liberty really was popular. We had 6.7 million downloads of the show last year, and I'm hoping to beat it this year. And with your help, we can definitely go on. All right, so that's enough plugs for right now. Maybe one later in the show, because I don't have a sponsor. So I'm my own sponsor, or you're my sponsor. Today we're going to be talking about a story that came across my desk this morning. It looks like it was published yesterday in the 8 p.m. yesterday at the Washington Post, and it's an important story. And the story is called Daddy Issues: Are Ron Paul's Hardcore Stands a Problem for Son's Presidential Bid? While Rand seeks donors, his father talks secession. Now, a lot of times you guys are going to... Yeah, you have to excuse me today. Actually, I have a cold. It's really nasty up here on the East Coast. It's just absolutely nuts how bad the weather is. So it's giving me a bit of a cold. So excuse me if I cough and have to take little sips here and there. Let's go ahead and just read the story. We're going to talk through it. We're going to talk about some issues here, and then we can move on. Now, in Houston, it says, Rand Paul wants to lead the United States. On Saturday in Texas, his father was speaking at a conference about how to leave it. A lot of times, people think secession, they paint it as an absolute negative, said former Representative Ron Paul of Texas. After all, Paul said, the American Revolution was kind of a secession. You mean we should have been obedient to the king forever? So it's all in the way you look at it. This weekend was a crucial one for Rand Paul, the Republican senator from Kentucky and undeclared candidate for the presidency. Paul was in California trying to line up donors at an opulent retreat organized by the billionaire Koch brothers. Woohoo, go Kochs. At the same time, his father, retired after 12 terms in Congress and 3 presidential runs, was in the ballroom of an airport hotel here, the final speaker at a one-day seminar in breaking away from the central state. He followed a series of speakers who said that the U.S. economy and political establishment were tottering, and that the best response might be for states, counties, or even individuals to break away. The America we thought we knew, ladies and gentlemen, is a mirage. It's a memory. It's a foreign country, Jeff Deist, Ron Paul's former press secretary and chief of staff, told the group, and that's precisely why we should take secession seriously. The contrasting scenes this weekend illuminate the odd situation of the Pauls as the 2016 campaign season begins. They are a father and son tied together, but running in opposite directions. Rand, 52, is contemplating a presidential run, at its heart an act of optimism. He is moderating some hardline positions and introducing himself to donors and voters. At the same time, Ron, 79, has embraced a role as libertarianism's prophet of doom, telling his supporters that the United States is headed for catastrophes and might actually need catastrophes to get on the right track. Ooh. Which puts Rand in the unusual position of trying to win over the country while his father says it is going down the tubes. asked by a reporter whether he was worried about making trouble for his son's presidential campaign by talking about secession here, Ron Paul deflected the blame to the press. "If we had decent reporters, there would never be any problems. You think you could ever meet one? Have a heart, buddy." And that was not a nice thing for Ron to say. And, you know, everybody's got problems with the press, but I think my problem with blaming the press has always been that the press is giving the people, number one, they're giving the people what they want. And number two, their job is to ask politicians tough questions. And whether or not you like Ron Paul or not, which I like Ron Paul, whether or not you like him, you know, reporters are doing their job by asking him tough questions. And Ron actually got a very difficult question the other day regarding secession in regards to Ukraine. And mostly because Ron's position has been so all over the map when it comes to Putin's and his invasion of Ukraine, the Crimean Peninsula. The question that Ron got asked was basically like, shouldn't secession be legitimized by the people who support it, the people who live in the region, instead of like what Russia did, which is Russia basically came in and sort of forced a referendum that supported the invasion of Crimea. And Paul sort of dithered on that question. So Paul has been very inconsistent as of late in how he supports liberty. And I know that I might get some crap for saying that because he's supposed to be seen as this consistent politician, but Paul's actually been very inconsistent on this because he's talking about secession and legitimate secession. And in the meantime, his Ron Paul Institute, the Foreign Policy Institute, is sort of rubber stamping Putin's invasion of Crimea. And I think that is very inconsistent. So I know that there's a healthy room for debate on this one and skepticism of Western intervention into foreign affairs, but I want to talk about secession here in a few minutes. As soon as we finish this article, I want to talk about secession and the issues involved with secession and how it relates to liberty. So let's continue. He says Ron's trying to blame the reporters, which I think is a mistake. A spokesman for Rand Paul said he was not available to comment for this story. Both Pauls have said if Rand Paul runs for president, his father will not campaign with him. Wow. Now, I think in 2012, when we had Rand Paul and he was elected to the Senate, I think a lot of people thought that was shocking to me, that Ron wasn't even going to campaign for him, because I think everybody in 2012 who supported Ron, which I certainly did, we all sort of expected that, you know, Ron was going to go out and support Rand. And now we hear that his father's not going to campaign with him. That just goes to show how toxic Ron is to Republicans, which is unfortunate because, you know, sometimes you have to beat the Republicans before you beat the Democrats. Well, you know, Ron's always been an outsider, you know, and Rand has been more of an insider. And I think that both strategies are legit. I mean, again, as long as you're professing libertarian ideas and you're working towards libertarian causes, the strategy that you take to me is somewhat relevant. But I was very shocked to hear that Ron will not be campaigning for his father. Supporters of the two men are concerned that Ron Paul's continued activism will weigh on his son, even if they never appear on stage together. I actually agree with that. They worry that Rand Paul may have to repeatedly draw and redraw the lines between his father's views and his own. If I were Ron, and my son were running for president, and we were in the same situation, I would shut up, said, not a neocon, but, Walter Block, an economics professor at Loyola University in New Orleans. He rated Ron Paul a 98 on his personal scale of libertarianism, and Rand Paul a 70. And said he supported them both. All right, so if you're new to Liberty Land or you're new to Libertopia or Ancapistan or wherever we crazy libertarians live, Walter Block is a highly regarded libertarian economics professor. If you've ever heard of Dan D'Amico, he's sort of an acolyte of Walter Block, and many libertarians today now get their intellectual basis from Walter Block, who writes very controversial and very interesting pieces, thought-provoking pieces. Considered sort of a staple, modern Lysander Spooner kind of, but not really, because Lysander Spooner actually had bad economics, but we'll talk about Spooner some other time. Still, Walter Block saying that Ron should shut up, I mean, to me, that ought to tell you something. But, you know, if I said it, if I went out and said it, you know, because I got the anarchists on my butt all the time, If I said the same thing, they'd be like, Austin, you're a traitor to Ron. Well, is Walter Block a traitor to Ron? No. But he's saying that Ron should shut up. Now, here's some more quotes from Walter Block. He says, this is unbelievable, Ron is a millstone around Rand's neck in the sense that he's not helping him, or at least he's not helping him be Rand, Block said. Because Rand is a compromiser, and Ron and compromise don't belong in the same sentence. The two Pauls share many political positions. Both, for instance, have concerns about the NSA's surveillance, but the son has called for reforming the agency's practices while the father wants to kill the NSA. Woo! And I can say I sympathize with both of them on that. Both Pauls are skeptical of overseas wars, but the father wants to pull all U.S. forces out of the Middle East, while the son has supported using U.S. warplanes to strike at the Islamic State, believing the group is a threat to American installations in the region. The most important differences, however, are in the solutions they see to the nation's problems. Rand Paul's solution is Rand Paul, a new president with the right ideas and the guts to make the system work. All is not well in America. America's adrift. Something's clearly wrong, Paul said in his downbeat response to President Obama's upbeat State of the Union address last week. America needs many things, but what America desperately needs is new leadership. Ron Paul's solution, it appears, is to invite more calamity so that Americans are forced to realize that the system is broken. Sanity will not return to U.S. leaders until our financial system collapses, an event for which they are feverishly working, he wrote in an online column this month. The same column included predictions of greater inner-city strife, increased casualties amongst American armed forces overseas, and a dangerous escalation of tensions with Russia. Before we can actually restore our liberties, we most likely will have to become a lot less free and much poorer, he wrote. Ouch, ouch, ouch. I understand, like, listen, I'm critical of our current policy, but I am not as pessimistic as Ron. I mean, I guess being 79 years old, he's getting a bit cranky, and, you know, he has nothing to look forward to. Remember, Ron's views of the world may be colored by his age and the fact that there's no reason to be optimistic when you're 79 years old. You have nothing really to look forward to. Rand has something to look forward to, and even though Rand's State of the Union address, which I thought was brilliant and well done and very libertarian, struck that downbeat tone, but still painted a picture for which we can have a roadmap for a more optimistic future. I mean, don't you want that? I mean, do we want greater inner city strife, really? Do we want more casualties amongst American armed forces? Do we want an escalation of tensions with Russia? And Ron says, you know, let me read this again, before we can actually restore our liberties, we most likely will have to become a lot less free and much poorer. That's horrible. That's horrible. And if a politician said something like that nowadays, you know, I think people would be rightly upset with him. And especially young people. Because, you know, I'm not, you know, in my 20s anymore. I'm turning 34 next month. But, you know, I have optimism for the future. I have hope. You know, I don't want there to be inner-city strife or increased casualties, and I'm not saying Ron wants there to be that, but I think some libertarians, they want there to be this strife. They want the system to collapse. They want people to suffer. They want that because they think that's how they'll restore their liberties so that they can legalize weed or, you know, whatever it is. Not that I don't want to legalize weed, but, you know, I think that there's some problems with some ulterior motives of people in our movement. And I've said this before kind of quietly to people, but you know, I think some people are anarchists on principle because they understand the intellectual concepts like maybe Walter Block and Dan DiMicco, and I respect that. But I think that some people, and you're gonna think this is nuts, but you know, I have a sneaking suspicion sometimes that the only reason that some people are anarchists is because they want to overthrow the government and replace it with their own brand of tyranny. You know? And so when people are sort of fomenting discord, fomenting secession, for example, their motives aren't always impure, but sometimes they are, and we see that in anarcho-communists, of course. I mean, that's their modus operandi. That's the MO. That's the sow chaos in order to bring about a dictatorship. You know, and for them, you know, they prefer the calm of despotism to the tempestuous sea of liberty, but in the short term, they want to, you know, bring about a boisterous sea of violence to destroy the relative tranquility that we have in the United States. I mean, unless you live in Ferguson, or unless you live in, you know, New York City maybe, or something like that, you're not constantly subjected to assaults on your liberties unless you're, you know, doing something, unless you're going through a DUI road check perhaps. But you know, there are absolutely are reasons that we have to secure our liberties from tyrannical government. But we have to make sure that what we're doing is for the right reasons. And that's why I'm going to talk about secession when it's from the standpoint, in a few minutes we're going to talk about secession from the standpoint of the United States from a moral standpoint. There's the legal issue and then there's the moral issue. And libertarians, we always like to say what's illegal is not always immoral. What's immoral is not always illegal, you know, and we have to differentiate that. And I think that that's too often the problem is that everybody in the libertarian movement and in the conservative movement and certainly neo-Confederates are going to say this, but they see secession always as a good thing, always as a good thing, because to them, decentralization is more important than individual liberty. You know, I mean, ask yourself this. Would you rather have a unified world government that was classically liberal or tons of decentralized nations that were all like North Korea? You know, and that's the beauty of our federal system. I don't want to digress too much because I want to talk about secession and all of those issues in just a moment. I want to finish this and the political issues. So let me get back to the article after I have a drink of water because, oh man, I'm dying today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm dying. These opposing worldviews, one looking up, the other looking for rock bottom, have led the polls to enunciate sharply different outlooks on American politics. Last year, for instance, the younger Paul campaigned for Republicans in 30 states before the midterms. On election day, his father said he didn't expect much to change. "We don't have true democracy," he told the Kremlin-based Russia Today network, although he said that his son was one of the forces for good in Washington. "We have a monopoly of ideas that are controlled by leaders of two parties, and though they call it two parties, it's really one philosophy." Now, how disingenuous is Ron being when he talks about how we don't have a good press and how he's complaining about reporters, but then he goes on the Russian Today, the propaganda network, and says we don't have a true democracy? I mean, does he really not see the irony here? Am I the crazy one here that he's criticizing that we don't have a good press? Well, at least our press isn't owned by the Russian government, by the American government. You know, like, say what you will about corporations and the government's control of corporations. You know, if you're a conspiracy theorist weirdo on this thing, then I really can't, you know, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to people who understand that in the United States, at least our media is not controlled by our government. It's not. And I worked for Fox. I know this. Boy, that was an eye-opener. And a lot of libertarians don't like to hear this, but, you know, there are a lot of very independent thinkers there at Fox and a lot of liberals. But at Russia Today, there aren't. Listen, I know both news agencies very well, ladies and gentlemen. I have spent my time over at Russia Today doing my own investigations, and I supported Ron Paul openly on Russia Today. So please understand, I'm trying to be objective here and to hold to libertarian beliefs objectively. But when Ron goes on Russia Today and says, "We don't have true democracy, we have a monopoly of ideas controlled by leaders of two parties," I'm just sort of flabbergasted. Do you think that there is no monopoly on ideas in Russia? I mean, come on, Ron. I mean, this is why I now agree with Walter Block. Please, shut up. I love you, but shut up. Do you ever have people in your life that you're like, "I love you, please just shut the hell up"? I mean, I really hate to say this, but I mean, Ron's killing us here. Because if you really care about Rand and you really care about the liberty movement continuing, it's not going to be with the philosophy of doom and gloom. You cannot sell a message of liberty to the American people that provides no hope for their future. They will choose socialism and they will choose big government if big government promises them the world and candy and free community college. That's what they want to hear. But we can't promise them that. What we can promise is a positive, optimistic, upbeat future, a bright future that is libertarian. And so Ron is taking the wrong tack here. He's speaking his mind, and he's certainly free to do so. And when I say, you know, shut up, I'm only saying this in the same sense that Walter Block said it just a few minutes ago. Again, I'm trying to be objective, okay? I'm not just, and I don't just support politicians blindly. You can see I'm criticizing Ron. I was a big supporter. I criticize Rand when he does something that I disagree with. And I'm sure he will when he's president. When? Not if. But I do think that this is very hypocritical of Ron to go on and say, you know, oh, well, we don't have, you know, maybe the, if the press wasn't so blah, blah, blah. But then he goes on Russia Today and he says, oh, we have a monopoly of ideas. Really? That's bullshit. That's bullshit, Ron. So on Saturday, he goes to Houston and he talks about secession. And it was organized by the Mises Institute. Ron Paul's a member of the board there. And he says, we've been Jeff Dice says, we've been conquered. We've been occupied by the state and its phony veneer of democratic elections, Jeff Dice says. And why not seek out ways to split apart rationally and nonviolently? Why dismiss secession, the pragmatic alternative that's staring us all in the face? Now, what kind of secession is he talking about here? Because he's talking about rationally and nonviolently. I don't know. I mean, I guess individually we can secede, but I mean, the problem with that is if you try and secede a state, remember, there are the people in the state who maybe they don't want to secede. So what are you going to do? Are you going to vote democratically to get out? Well, what about the 49%? If it's 51 to 49, what about the 49% of people that didn't want to secede? You're forcing your beliefs on them. Why don't you secede individually? Now I sound like a Republican saying, if you don't like it, you can get out. Well, at some point, if you do want to secede, you do have that option. Get out. Leave. I mean, the beauty of the federal system in the United States is if you want to secede from Taxachusetts, you can go to Nevada and be free. You can get your prostitutes. But that's the problem, I think, is that too many of our libertarian, leaders, I don't know, it's not a good word for our movement. I mean, we say libertarian leaders, but I mean, really everybody kind of is doing their own thing. But that is the problem, is that there's inherent contradictions in all of this, you know, and we're going to talk about secession again, because again, they're going into in this article, but I think that there is some misunderstandings here of how this process works legally and morally. And while they're making the moral argument for secession here, there is no legal argument for secession, and there may be no moral argument in most cases simply because in order for a state to secede, it is forcing the other people who live there out of their homes. Like, what are you going to do, make refugees out of everybody in Texas who doesn't want to secede, right? Well, if they don't like it, they can get out. Well, what if they fight back? What if they choose to rebel? Will you put down that rebellion against secession? So that's the problem, ladies and gentlemen, and it's one of the many reasons why I don't support secession in the United States, at least on the state level in some sense. In many cases, I have supported secession just because I support it from a moral perspective, but from a legal perspective, it's on shaky ground. Again, we're going to talk about this again, so I want you to be clear about this, and I want there to be a full understanding of my views, because so many times people take words out of my mouth. Certainly the morons over at the Ron Paul Institute do that quite often, so I want to be very careful about this, because there will be stuff taking it out of context of what I say. But again, listen. I'm a reporter, and I'm trying to be objective. I may be a libertarian, and I'm biased, but I'm fair, okay? I'm fair. So, continuing on, other speakers offered a number of definitions for secession. They said individual states could break off, notwithstanding the experience in the Civil War. Lincoln violated the Constitution to keep the Union together, one speaker said. Well, are you a constitutionalist, or are you an anarchist? Well, so you're going to say, I mean, I understand. You hold people to the principles that they say they believe, like Lincoln, right? Right. But states could even break off and join other countries if they wanted. Well, that's statist. If Texas wanted to secede and they want to join Mexico, I think they can do that. There's nothing stopping them, said Brian McClanahan. Who are these nuts? I think Mexico is in many ways far freer than the United States, Dice agreed. Yeah, there's an argument to be made there. It's certainly less prosperous. I think that they're less prosperous because they're less free overall. It's ridiculous to make that statement. I mean, they're free. They're free in the sense that what? That you can get cocaine and weed in Cozumel, right? Yeah. Well, but if you think that they're free when they've got drug gangs running all over the place, you know, running the cartels run their local governments, you've got another thing coming. And so, of course, we've got a bunch of nuts here. Talking about how Mexico is freer than the United States. Yeah, right. But the speaker said that there were other ways to secede beyond convincing your state to go it alone. Individual people could secede by doing such things as homeschooling their children, not going to mainstream colleges, owning gold and foreign currencies, and stockpiling food, fuel, firearms, and cash. Seceding from dependency, that was called. Okay, let's just look at this paragraph by itself. Okay, beautiful. Here's where Austin's hardcore libertarian instinct goes, yes, exactly. This is the way to secede. Homeschooling your children? Absolutely. You know, like, just make sure they get vaccinated, please. You know, please vaccinate your kids. Not going to mainstream colleges, great, fine. Owning gold and foreign currencies, hell yes, but why would you want to own this, the currency of a foreign state? I don't understand that. Stockpiling food, fuel, firearms, and cash. Okay, hell yes. I'm all about stockpiling firearms and cash, right? Seceding from dependency, yes, absolutely. You know, Henry David Thoreau, absolutely. You know, like civil disobedience and how to live on your own and be self-sufficient. I appreciate that. But I want to issue you a warning to tell you to beware. Beware many of these prophets of gloom and doom. Because when they say things like, stockpile food, fuel, firearms, and cash, they also, after that, add a little disclaimer, which you can buy at my website. Right? A lot of times libertarians will say, well, there's an ulterior motive, there's an ulterior motive, blah, blah, blah. Well, you think that people who are, you don't think there aren't people who out there who take advantage of paranoid preppers? Hmm? That there aren't people who want to take advantage of libertarians for that same reason? You know, I'm going to tell you a good story right here, right now. And this is actually very juicy. And it's related to taking advantage of libertarians. And I haven't told this publicly before, but I was actually approached a couple of years ago by the head of a new TV network that's been launched. And this was an opportunity for me to possibly be a producer, possibly a very lucrative executive producer position on a new television network that was going to be launched, that was going to be a libertarian television network. Now, this isn't JAG TV. Because if some of you know me, or maybe you know Jennifer Grossman, there was an attempt to create a libertarian television network out of Malibu, California, and I was tapped to sort of drive that project. Unfortunately, it never got funded. But here's the story of a man who came to me and approached me about being a libertarian, because I'm sort of out there. And he said that, he's going to make my dreams come true. Now, this guy, they've launched this television network. I won't tell you what it is just yet. But they've launched this television network, and I was approached to be a producer. And then and I was supposedly supposed to meet him out in California and talk to him about taking over, perhaps three or four shows, coming up with three or four plot, show guidelines. But then he disappeared on me, but backed away. And I got kind of curious. I was like, what? This is strange, I mean, I know that there are other libertarian TV producers out there, because I've worked with quite a few of them, but there aren't many, and certainly not as many with as high a profile as I was. So I was, maybe a little offended, a little upset, like, why don't you want me, right? But then I got a little curious, so I did some investigation into his background, and it turns out that the man who wanted to create a libertarian television network, which he has launched, by the way, was one of the major donors to the Obama campaign and to Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic National Convention. So how interesting is it that here is a man whose ideological backgrounds, according to his monetary donations, shows that he is anything but libertarian, and yet here he is trying to take advantage of our movement, our ideas, and to profit from them. Now, there's nothing wrong with profiting, right? I have no problem with profiting. But when someone, I think there is a problem when people are disingenuous and they're just trying to profit off of something which they have no interest. Now, here's a good example, another good example, MrConservative.com. The guy who runs Mr. Conservative, who takes advantage of the, I call them, low-information conservative voters. If you've seen Mr. Conservative online, they're pretty big. They've got a huge Facebook page, and they've got a pretty popular website. Well, The guy who runs Mr. Conservative, he doesn't give a damn about conservatives. I think he's kind of liberal. He just knows that there's a lot of low information conservative voters out there, and they do whatever. Well, you know, let's bring it back to full circle to the Washington Post here. When somebody says stockpile food, fuel, firearms, and cash, they may not even be libertarian, but they just know that they're going to be able to take advantage of you. And that's what I assumed was happening when I was approached by this gentleman, and who probably verifiably saw that I wasn't a sellout, and he probably thought that I would be more trouble than I was worth. And I am. I am trouble. I'm trouble for big government, and I'm trouble for the liars, and I'm trouble for people who want to take advantage of us, ladies and gentlemen. I am on your side. And sometimes I may say things that you don't like and maybe you disagree with, but one thing that is clear, my motive is absolutely clear. I am standing for individual liberty, economic freedom, and personal liberty. And you know, if that drags me down, then that's okay. If that drags me down, if that harms my career prospects, which it has, then I'm fine with that. But one thing that I will not do is I will not back away from the truth, and I will not keep my mouth shut in order to not offend some of the quote-unquote leaders of this movement when I think that they're charlatans, which I think some of them are. You know, I think that Alex Jones is a fraud and a mountebank, and I'm not ashamed to say that, because I think he takes advantage of the paranoid fringe of our movement, which when I say paranoid fringe, if fringe implies a minority, it is not. Boy, there are a lot of fringy libertarians. And so now when I see these things, you know, I see that the ideas are right. Individual people can secede doing these certain things. That's what I like to hear, you know. And individual secession to me is exciting. I haven't even finished the article yet, and I haven't talked about secession yet from the moral and the legal standpoint. We'll discuss in just a moment. Let me finish this, but I just wanted to warn you, ladies and gentlemen, because I think it's important we talk about that there are charlatans in this movement, and there are people who are being totally duplicitous, and you must guard yourself against someone just because they say they're a libertarian or they're speaking at a libertarian conference. I mean, Oliver Stone spoke at International Students for Liberty last year. Nobody thinks Oliver Stone's a libertarian. Maybe Oliver Stone does. Anyways. So in theory, speakers said, every American could just secede from the others, creating a nation, statist, where no one was subjugated to anyone else's rule. What do we do for national defense? Someone asked. National defense is largely a myth. In other words, my fears for my family from Mr. Putin are far more remote than my fears of Mr. Obama and Mr. Boehner, Dice said, meaning Vladimir Putin and John Boehner. He conceded that there was one problem with this plan. The thorn is that nuclear weapons do exist and somebody would have control over them, Dice said, but secession is not perfection. It's not utopia. That's right. It's not perfection and it's not utopia. And to say that national defense is largely myth is to ignore the fact that North Korea has nuclear missiles that could hit California. So national defense is largely myth. I suppose John Boehner, you know, raising cigarette taxes and then, you know, ending with, you know, Eric Garner's death, you know, is obviously a threat to the home front. But you're kooky if you think that we don't need some sort of national security. You're a kook, okay? Because, Vladimir Putin is unlikely to provoke the United States because he knows that you don't want to poke the American bear for too long. Because we're crazy. We've shown how nuts we can be. You know, it's sort of like, what's that scene in Batman where Michael Keaton's like, you know, you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts. And that's sort of like, that was a Nixonian approach to like the Cold War and stuff like that, like Khrushchev. And I was like, you want mutually assured destruction? Like, you think you're crazy, Russia? Like, we'll show you how freaking crazy we are. You want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts. I think America, that people don't pick on America mostly because they know they're going to get their ass kicked. I mean, that just goes to show you how stupid Islamic radical terrorists are attacking the United States, because we're going to invade Afghanistan and then we're going to knock off the country next door just for shits and giggles. So people know not to screw with us. And maybe that's why he's like, oh, well, I'm not afraid of Russia. Well, you know, I don't really go to bed afraid of Putin. I do go to bed thinking, man, I hope to God I'm not going to get blown up on the subway next week. You know, because somebody's invisible friend is, you know, whispering in their ear, telling them, you know, hey, strap a bomb to your chest. Now, those are real threats. But, you know, if you live in a cabin in the middle of the woods, nothing wrong with that. But if you do, I don't, I ain't afraid of no terrorists. Yeah, because nobody wants to bomb your ass with your freaking, you know, living in a prepper shelter underneath the ground, you know, with your gold and your, you know, and your 22 and your, you know, 6 years of Alex Jones food cans and water filters. Yeah, you have nothing to fear. Well, guess what? I live in a high target area. So I guess, you know, some of us do have something to fear. And I don't go to bed afraid of that, but I mean, I do think about it, and I certainly want protection against it. That's for effing sure. If I have to pay these tax dollars for national defense, it sure as hell better be effective. That's for sure. Anyways, so moving on. Paul's speech, the day's last, was titled Secession and Liberty, but the focus was largely on the latter, liberty. Paul spent relatively little time on the mechanics or morality of secession. Surprise, surprise. Instead, talking about the virtues of a smaller federal government and the ways in which big governments impose war on peace-loving people. Paul's son, the one headed to California, was mentioned only once on stage. We have five children. There's one involved, I think, in politics. I can't remember his name, he said, as the audience laughed. Rand Paul will need to broaden his appeal far beyond his father's hardcore supporters if he hopes to win the GOP nomination for his father. His father never could. But some members of that core said he was losing them by adopting policies closer to the GOP mainstream. And that's true. And before I read their reasoning for why he's mainstream and why you know that so many libertarians are freaking stupid, let me agree that Rand is losing some of his father's supporters. But when I read to you what they say, maybe it's better that they go. He is the Star Wars Episode One, said Kent Oler, 38, who records sound for TV and movies. He meant that the younger Paul was like the long-anticipated but largely disappointing sequel to the Star Wars movie franchise, which is pretty funny. You have to like him to some degree just because the name's still stuck on him, but at the end of the day, he's just not freaking right. Oler and his younger brother Adam, sitting next to him, took the analogy further. Rand Paul's endorsement of Republican Mitt Romney in 2012 election was his Jar Jar Binks, comparing the Romney endorsement to the annoying alien that many Star Wars aficionados said made the Phantom Menace prequel irretrievably bad. Chris Williams, of 23, of Austin, was at the same table, trying to find a way to make sense of the differences between father and son. Would it be so bad for one guy to totally fake and pretend like a neocon and then revert to his true libertarianism, Williams said? Like a libertarian Manchurian candidate, asked Ken Oler. It's dumb. It's so many layers, Williams said, realizing his idea wouldn't work. Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, I think that when, and that's the end of the article. That was by David Farenthold. Wonderful article by David Farenthold. It did a fantastic job of analyzing what's going on in our movements. But, you know, if that's the best we can do, is reference Star Wars, a 38-year-old man referencing Star Wars as, you know, Star Wars Episode One with Rand. I mean, just come on, you know, get serious. There are obviously differences between Ron and Rand. I happen to like the differences, by the way. I happen to like a libertarian Republican who thinks that, yeah, there does come a time when you have to kick some ass. Because I actually do believe that. I'm not a pacifist. And I think Ron is a pacifist. And I'm not. And it's, you can be a pacifist and be a libertarian, but you can also be a libertarian who believes in self-defense. Okay. And to say there's no need for a national defense. I mean, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but you know, if you're an anarchist, again, you're just going to get mad. And why are you listening to me anyway? Like, so you can bash me and take my quotes out of context. No. But I do believe in a national defense. I'm a minarchist. I'm a constitutionalist. Maybe not the Constitution as it's currently written, but we're going to talk about that right now because we're going to talk about secession. And we're going to talk about morality versus legality. Now, here's the thing. Somebody asked me yesterday on my Facebook page, and I would like to read this exchange because I think that it was a very good exchange. And people on my Facebook page have actually been getting a lot more reasonable lately. I think it's because all the nutty nuts have been kind of self-selecting themselves away. But let's see. Okay, so yeah, so I was talking about Sons of Liberty last night, which was very, very good. Historically inaccurate, but sort of like libertarian war porn, revolution porn. And I was talking about the new Texas Rising historical drama about the Alamo that they're making. And Matt Stroker asks publicly. This is on my producer Peterson page. So if you go to look up on Facebook, look up Austin Peterson. My last name is spelled all E's, no O's. Peterson, S-E-N. You'll find me. And Matt Stroker asks, do you think Texas should have been able to secede, Austin? And I asked, in which instance? Matt Stroker laughs. Ha ha, you're smarty pants. The same laws would apply in any instance. Any of them. And so I said, not in 1861, for certain. That's, of course, the Civil War. And I said, also remember that the Constitution requires the federal government to guarantee a Republican government in every state. That contradicts the legality of secession, although not the morality of secession. The 1861 secession was both illegal and immoral. Now, compare that to the American Revolution, which Ron rightly does call an act of legitimate secession. That act of secession was illegal, but not immoral. The Confederate secession was illegal and immoral. Now, why was it immoral? Well, let me just read to you for the reasons why Texas seceded. They stated plainly, she was received as a Commonwealth holding, talking about Texas, maintaining and protecting the institution known as Negro slavery, the servitude of the African to the white race within her limits, a relation that had existed from the first settlement of her wilderness by the white race, and which her people intended should exist in all future time. All future time. All future time. In perpetuity. Now, some people, some libertarians who support secession say, oh, well, yes, of course, the Constitution may, you know, the Union was considered a perpetual union by the founders. However, secession is legitimate in the sense that, you know, you can't hold on to somebody forever. Well, you do you not see a contradiction here? Because listen, the Texans who seceded said all future time. Now, do you think that the founders, when they wrote the Constitution, when they brought the states together into the Union, that they meant that the Union should stay together for all future time? You're damn right they did. And the Constitution itself doesn't declare it to be a perpetual union. That phrase comes from the Articles of Confederation. Under American constitutional law, it does mean that the states are not permitted to withdraw from the Union. Now, that's one reason, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, but there's also the fact that the Constitution guarantees, and the Constitution says it specifically, the perpetual union, it doesn't. That was from the Articles of Confederation. But the Constitution says that the government shall, the federal government shall, is obligated to, I need to just pull up this part of the Constitution. I just don't have it in front of me. But it's obligated to provide a Republican form of government to every state. I can get the perfect wording in a moment. So the Constitution says that the states must stay in the Union for all future time. Now, secessionists and 10th Amendment fans, of which I'm definitely a fan, they'll point to the 10th Amendment and say, well, you know, all rights not written down here specifically go to the states, and after that, the people. But the problem with that is that the Constitution also says that the federal government must guarantee a Republican form of government. Well, if Texas wanted to secede and form a communist dictatorship, the federal government would be obligated to intervene. That was the point. You know, the whole idea was this, that the founders were all about balance of power. You know, that the federal government would be played off the state government, because if you think that local governments can't be tyrannical, you know, see Jim Crow. You know, there are many tyrannical local governments. You know, there's a famous line of the Patriot. Why should I trade one tyrant 1,000 miles away for 1,000 tyrants 1 mile away? And generally, I believe that local decentralized government is better because you can have more accountability. But it's not always better. And you have to admit that. You know, like, as much as, you know, I despise the federal government in many ways, what it's become, it doesn't change the fact of the law is what the law is, and morality is what morality is. And those two things are not often the same. Sometimes they are. And when I talk about a secession, I'm saying that the Articles of the Perpetual Union meant that the states can't secede legally. Morally? Perhaps. I mean, some secession movements, you know, I do support because I think that they're inherently nonviolent. I think that they would provide better local governance. I think that it would be, for example, the state of Jefferson in California, that's a big one that's been going on for, you know, I think it's like almost 100 years. They've had tried to push a reform of California to where Northern California kind of wants to break away from Southern California. And that'd probably be a good idea. Is it legal? Probably not. Could they make it legal? I think they could. I mean, theoretically, people could vote to, you know, form a new state up there. But the federal government might intervene because they might see it as their constitutional prerogative. And I might disagree with the federal government, but they have a legal standing. They may not have a moral standing, but they may have a legal standing. And, you know, these are the problems that we have. You know, we have to acknowledge this, ladies and gentlemen. But I think that too often, we do have some neo-Confederates in the movement. And, you know, we've spent a lot of time, like, you know, Tom Woods and Robert Murphy, and spent a lot of time saying, oh, well, you know, people are just pointing us as neo-Confederates. But it's wrong to say that there aren't any. Because there are. Which is hilarious. I've even met people who are who consider themselves anarchist Confederates, right? That's because, and those are the people that I'm talking about when I say, hey, these are people who want to secede from the United States to set up their own local tyranny. And that's what Texas did in 1861. They said slavery for all future time. Them's fighting words. And to me, that's basically saying, you know, that your life is forfeit. And, you know, that's why I really just don't have any sympathy for the South. I don't have any sympathy for arguments about, you know, tariffs or anything like that. Because, people don't go to war for tariffs, ladies and gentlemen, like that. I mean, maybe different nations like that, if they have trade disagreements and the king, you know, is a dictator and can go to war for something stupid like that, maybe he will. But democracies don't go to war for tariffs like that. No. And it ignores, you know, to say that slavery wasn't the primary cause of the Civil War is to be totally ignorant. Not just because the fact that they said themselves in their own Articles of Secession that the reason that they were doing so was primarily to maintain chattel slavery. I just read it from you, ladies and gentlemen. Don't listen. If you're grinding your teeth right now listening to me, don't shoot the messenger. It's right there. Go read the Articles of Secession. Please read the Confederate Constitution. It's horrible. I mean, we're lucky that the federal government crushed the slaveholding governments of the South. We're lucky. But if you think that decentralization is just somehow some higher libertarian purpose, well, you're an idiot. Because libertarianism has nothing to do with how close your government is to you. It has to do with whether or not that government respects individual rights. Again, a global government, a classical liberal global government, would be better than a million governments split up into little North Korean governments. Yeah, maybe it would be easier to keep you controlled if we have the panopticon, right? It would probably be harder to control people if we had a global government. Alex Jones, people aren't going to like that, but you know what? It's freaking true. And, you know, I also like to make the joke, and, you know, we'll talk about secession again and perpetual union in just a second, but I always like to say, you know, the only thing that'll ever get the people of the world to unite and form a global government and to put all of our problems aside, America, China, Russia, whatever, is if we were ever invaded by aliens. That would help us set up a global government and have world peace pretty damn quick. Of course, we'd have to fight the aliens first. All right, I think I ought to leave it there. I've been going on, and honestly, like, I'm dying here, man. My lungs are filling up with fluid. I don't know, I got pneumonia or something, but I'm dying. So what did you think of the show? Did I make you angry? Have I lost more friends? I'm sorry. I'm just trying to be objective. I'm not trying to be an a-hole. I'm just trying to report the facts. Because you know what? Ron Paul, sorry, but we do have a free press in the United States, and they don't in Russia. So I'm not going to try and make cover for people who say that say otherwise. And so I think it's important for us, if we're going to spread the ideas of liberty, ladies and gentlemen, we must be objective. We must be fair. The American people are not going to trust us. They are not going to trust us or our philosophy if they feel that we're being disingenuous. I think that we need to refine our arguments. We need to discuss a real foreign policy of freedom and one that would provide the maximum benefit for all people, not just people in the United States, people all over the world. And that's not saying being Team America World Police here. I'm just saying that if we live our principles, then I think that the world will be inspired by such. So, what did you think of the show? Do me a favor, ladies and gentlemen, go to iTunes and subscribe. You'll find us iTunes.com. You can go to Stitcher if you don't have an Apple device. But if you don't have an Apple, have an Apple device, get Stitcher. If you do have an Apple device and you like the show, five stars. Give me five stars. Five stars on iTunes would be awesome. And if you're really super cool and you want me to love you forever, write me a nice review. And of course, if you're just like, oh my God, this Leif Beaverson, Austin Peterson guy is such a superstar, I want to give him a Bitcoin for all this thanking that he made me do. He made me do so much thanking, I'm going to do some drinking. Well, I'll buy the next drink if you send me a Bitcoin. So do me a favor, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget, come back every single day. Your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com and sister site, Liberty Violence.